We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
If you don't know by now, Michael Knowles is Catholic. He's in the political sphere. He's with the Daily Wire and has the show, The Michael Knowles Show, and he really does wear his Catholicism on his sleeve. A faithful Catholic, so my question, Michael, is how do you prioritize your faith over politics?
It's a good question because I know sometimes people try to play it closer to the vest and they're a little less flamboyant, perhaps, about their religious views. For me, I suppose it's all of a piece. The politics, the culture, the religion. It's all of a piece. And I think one of the great errors of modern politics is that we try to compartmentalize and divvy society up, and even at the sort of hyper-individualistic level, to pretend that these things don't have to do with one another. But as Andrew Breitbart, the great patron saint of Hollywood conservatives, famously pointed out, politics is downstream of culture. And we know that culture is downstream of religion. Culture and cult come from the same root word, to cultivate. You know, what the culture worships will define that culture. And so it's all of a piece. You can't have a politics that's totally disconnected from your religion. The phrase separation of church and state is one of the most misunderstood and abused phrases in our entire culture, because first of all, there has never been a state in history that is divorced from religious considerations. Sometimes you'll hear this silly phrase, we can't legislate morality. But of course, all laws legislate morality. All laws derive ultimately from the moral law. I mean, even if you're making an argument over tax rates, the reason to lower or raise taxes derives from moral arguments about the human person and property. Even arguments about parking tickets are ultimately moral arguments. And so you have to legislate morality. And the great coup that has been achieved, I think, by the secular left in recent years is they've convinced everybody, even many conservatives, that secular liberalism is neutral. That's the neutral playing field. That's what the Founding Fathers wanted. And of course, it's not. The Founding Fathers never wanted anything of the kind. John Adams pointed out that unless society were moral and religious, the Constitution would fall apart. The founders of our country supported religious institutions, and even the more theologically eccentric of them had great respect and even practice for these kind of religious institutions. So I just think you're going to end up in a crazy society if you don't take these questions back to first principles. And it's one of the great insights of Edmund Burke, the kind of early modern conservative philosopher, who said, the age of chivalry is gone, that of sophisters, economists, and calculators has succeeded it, and the glory of Europe is extinguished forever. He said we shouldn't just focus on economics or bean counting, that's sort of silly. That's not a real politics. We have to talk about what really matters. Eternal questions that will shape our cultural views and our religious views.
Michael, I have a follow-up question with that, because you have a massive platform. You are an outspoken Catholic. Your faith means a tremendous amount to you. And you and I both know that real change truly does begin in the heart. So in the midst of being, you know, knee-deep in politics, what's your philosophy with a platform that you have to really change the heart and the mind and not just focus on the politics?
One thing that I've tried to do, sometimes unsuccessfully, is not to lose my temper. You know, there's a popular genre of political debate on both sides of the aisle, which is, you know, that you're going to smack down or destroy or totally stomp somebody in a political debate. And it's fun to do, and there is a place for it as well. If you're in a sort of performative debate with some big left-wing talking head, for instance, then the purpose of that public debate is not to convince, but it is merely to destroy. And then people can judge for themselves who made a better argument. But in most political debate, and most interview, certainly the interviews I like to conduct, I don't find that to be very productive. I really want to guide people and try to understand what they're thinking and then ask some questions and maybe expose some flaws in their thinking. Because we do have to remember, even though politics matters immensely, and I think politics matters a lot more than many Catholics are willing to admit, you know, we have a role in the culture. We We have a role in politics and government. We can't merely wait around for the next world. We have things to do in this world as well. But beyond that, we are called to charity. We're called to courage, sure. We're called to prudence, sure. And we're called to charity. And so if you're in a political debate and all you're interested in doing is absolutely tearing down your fellow American, that's going to be a Pyrrhic victory, because if you tear down half the country rather than merely tearing down their ideas, well, then half your country's gone.
Michael, it's fascinating that you bring that up about kind of keeping calm and really respecting the other person, essentially, in that argument, rather than maybe falling into the mocking and the name calling and just the outright foul language that can often occur on both sides of the spectrum when it comes to political, even moral conversation, debate. But this reminds me of what I wanted to get to, and that is maintaining friendships in the face of a culture of compelled speech and censorship. You speak of remaining calm in that kind of helps you to wear your faith really on your sleeve in many ways and to change hearts and minds because of how you conduct yourself. But do you think it's possible to have good friendships with people who disagree when we feel so compelled to throw up that blackout or the Black Lives Matter post, or when we're feeling censored by those exact people that are so-called our friends or family?
The trouble with war is that your opponent gets a say. So when some people say, well, war is not the answer, we have no place for war, and that's a very naive point of view, because your opponent has a say in that, and even if you say that I'm not going to engage in war, your opponent can. And the same is true in friendship. I do not let politics get in the way of my friendships. I have wonderful friendships with people who are not only liberal, kind of squishy liberals, but full-on hardcore left-wingers. And unfortunately, a lot of left-wingers are not willing to do that to conservatives. You see this borne out in social scientific data. When you look just on social media, left-wingers are much more likely to unfriend conservatives than vice versa.
Right.
You hear this all the time. Every Thanksgiving, there's some stupid article published in a left-wing magazine talking about how you should best scold your Republican uncle at the turkey table. Just absolutely preposterous. And in that case, you do have to be willing to let your friend or former friend walk away. You shouldn't become a pushover. You shouldn't lie about your views. You shouldn't try to change your own views just because you want to go along to get along with some intransigent friend who doesn't respect your own mind and your own faculties of reason. And that's a very sad thing, because you see friendships dissolve along those lines. But this is a sad world, and sometimes you've got to deal with a little bit of suffering in that way.
But that's the exact challenge. I think so many people are terrified of being themselves, of saying what they think about faith, politics, religion, anything, that it's actually worn tremendously on relationships that people just, I almost would say, aren't even developing relationships anymore because they're on pins and needles, afraid to say a thing that could offend someone else.
True. I think there's been a great degradation of friendship. And actually, part of it plays into the sexual revolution. I was actually speaking about this with a very smart friend of mine who has same-sex attraction. And I said, something that's really destroyed friendship is now everything's gay. And he laughed, and he knew exactly what I was talking about, which is now two people of the same sex are not permitted to have a deep, profound relationship without it being suspected of being sexual. And he said, oh, no, it's absolutely right, and I say this as a gay guy, but everything's become too gay. And what he meant is that you can, obviously there are sexual relationships, there are familial relationships, and there were at least at one time friend relationships where it's been described as two people standing next to one another looking at the same thing, maybe from a slightly different perspective. And you can talk about that and you can debate about that. And it's not about trying to destroy or smack. And it's not about staring one at the other person. You're really looking at the outside world and you are developing your own views of what that means. And I've been privileged to have some really wonderful friendships in my life. but they're not based around, you know, going along to get along, and they're not based around just talking about how great the chicken tastes. They're really based upon trying to delve the depths of what it means to be human, what our lives really mean, what we're striving for. And those friendships do tend to take on a spiritual dimension. And in this culture, it's very hard even to understand what that kind of friendship is. But I think we ought to strive for that. And if we have to lose a few of these accidental friendships along the way, these shallow friendships, so be it. It's not a great loss.
I think this is one of the challenges that many people of faith have, and I think this is the importance of exposure. I know you come from the acting, arts, theater world. I come from the dancing world, and so we've been exposed to a lot of people who radically disagree with the way we live or the things we think or say about politics and religion. Yet at the same time, because we've had those deep encounters, we've had, you know, those opportunities to stand by side, as you said, perhaps it's allowed us to have that exposure to have more respect for the individual person rather than furthering the chasm between the two.
Of course. And our Lord puts it very well, as you would expect that he might, when he says that if you are not prepared to hate your father, hate your mother, hate your brother and sister, to follow him, then you are not prepared for him. You are not prepared for salvation. This is not a call to go be mean to your parents, but it's a call to put God first and to put that relationship first. Talk about a true friendship. Greater love has no man than to give his life for his friends. And when you put friendship and all human relationship as subsidiary to that relationship that you have with God, everything falls into place, all the very, even the trivial relationships that you have. But when you try to flip that and you say that, you know, my relationship with Johnny from work, who doesn't like that I voted for Trump or something, that's the first thing, and I've got to change all my views. When you do that, you totally flip it around, and it will degrade all of your other relationships as well.